Good day, everyone. It's Kieran Russell here from the Foreign Exchange Corporate Desk, and I'm joined today by Chris Brand from our Spot and Forward Trading Desk. We were meant to be also joined by our Chief Economist, Phil Shaw, but unfortunately, he's been double booked at the last minute. However, good news is that we are still going to be able to get his thoughts on the market. Rather fortuitously, Phil spoke at an economic webinar this morning. So what we've decided to do is just pull in an excerpt from Phil's discussion so that you can be brought up to speed with the latest views from our economics desk. Without further ado, let's cut straight to Phil's speech then, after which I will pick Chris's brains on the current state of play in the currency market.
So let's begin on the economics and the COVID situation in the UK. And it's over a year since we began to learn about the COVID crisis. And in terms of the numbers, globally, there have been 97 million reported cases and over 2 million deaths. And in the UK, I think we're now in the third week. It's difficult to keep track, isn't it? But I think it's the third week of what effectively is our third lockdown. Most recently, the figures show that the surge in daily UK infections late last year has started to go into reverse. So that's obviously good news. And that actually applies to the numbers on a world basis as well. And I'll just make a few economic related points. To begin with, our reading is that the downturn in daily cases indicates that the lockdowns are actually working. And, you know, perhaps given the timings of the reduction in the infections, that perhaps the tier four restrictions were actually bringing cases down, albeit too slowly. It'll be interesting to hear Professor Barrett and his views on that. But one of the issues affecting the economy is that the current lockdown may need to last a while, given what appears to be the greater transmissibility of several new COVID variants. We've got a review from the government on the 15th of February, I think it is, and that may not result in much, if any, change in current conditions. Now, there is talk about Easter being a key date to unlock the conditions. Don't know if that's the case, but I have looked it up. Unfortunately, we've got an early Easter rather than happening at the end of April. So there's a little bit of hope there. Second point is that the economies seem to have adapted since March, April last year. Recently, the survey numbers which come out of Europe in general have held up relatively well, given widespread lockdown conditions in numerous countries. And if you look at the UK picture specifically, GDP in November fell by 2.6% month on month over the lockdown period. Now, compare that with earlier in the year. GDP fell by 19% in April, 7% in March. So why have we got a more modest decline this time? And I think, you know, one is that, you know, if a sector is closed anyway, then tightening restrictions isn't going to make a huge amount of difference. But it seems to be the case that the economy is coping a little bit better with social restrictions than it was last year or earlier in the year. Retailers, for example, do seem to have got better at their online offerings. We do think that the economy will contract over the first 3 months of this year. I think that's virtually inevitable. But as far as the fourth quarter of last year is concerned, you know, we're of the view that the GDP probably rose a touch in Q4 compared with Q3. So, you know, on the basis that we get some unwinding of the restrictions over the spring, we don't think we're going to get two successive GDP declines over successive quarters. And, you know, for those who watch this thing, it means that the UK will not probably have gone through a double dip recession. Another point is that manufacturing is doing okay, and that's been helped by an upturn in the global economy more widely. Major contributor here is Asia. And it's quite interesting if you look at the social restrictions in East Asia, they are pretty modest compared with Europe, and amid tiny infection rates. So if you take Japan specifically, its case rate per capita, daily case rate, is about 1/20th of what it is in the UK. Of course, the great game changer, we hope, will be the vaccine. That will help to snuff out transmission, allowing the relaxation of the social restrictions and raising confidence, improving spending. And the government's been criticised for the poor handling of the pandemic, though I think internationally it's not on its own here. But one thing it does appear to have got right is vaccination, first on pre-ordering large amounts of vaccine and also rolling out a fast inoculation programme. And interesting stat, we've got, I think, 4.6 million people having been vaccinated at least once so far. And that now exceeds the number of recorded COVID cases in the UK, which is 3.5 million. When does life get back to normal? And again, that's something which I expect Mike will give a view on. I guess it partly depends on how many variants of the COVID virus emerge internationally, how serious they are. One view I do hear reasonably frequently is that governments are becoming averse to reopening economies and shutting them down again to contain the virus. So, you know, there seems to be a debate in policymaking circles, banning international travel, or at least having an Australasian style hotel quarantine period for people that arrive into the country. So the idea is then that when cases and hospitalizations are low, you can open up the domestic economy. Now, whether the government's inclined to do that, I guess, remains to be seen. On the US and stepping away from the virus for a minute or two, I thought I'd make a few points following Joe Biden's inauguration yesterday. So a couple of points on politics, a couple on economics. And as you probably know, on the 5th of January, the Democrats won two runoff elections for the US Senate, both in Georgia. Pretty narrow, though slightly greater majority than Biden gained in November there. The balance in the Senate is now 50-50. And the US Senate rules are that if you've got a tied vote, then that tie is broken by the vice president. So what that means is that Kamala Harris has the casting vote, which gives the Democrats control, albeit narrowly, of the chamber. Now, a point which isn't widely advertised is that the Democrats actually lost ground in the House of Representatives in the November elections, and they only actually have a majority of 10. Now, that is actually the narrowest majority for any party in the House for about 20 years. You've got finely balanced numbers, therefore, in both chambers, and the Democrats arguably are vulnerable to rebellions on the left of their party in the House as well. So the logical conclusion, I think, from the overall political makeup is that there's got to be a degree of bipartisanship across the aisle to get policies through. And, you know, with respect to Donald Trump's trial in the Senate, I don't really know where that leaves things. Would the numbers stack up for a conviction? Because you need a two-thirds majority for a conviction. And therefore, that would require 17 Republican senators to vote with 50 Democrats. And also, we don't know how hard the Democrats will push that. So lots of question marks there. But on the economic side, by far the biggest change will be fiscal policy. It was almost under the radar that the previous administration got a $900 billion stimulus package through right at the end of last year. Was it necessary? If you look at recent trends in the US economy, the labor market was weakening towards the end of 2020. We've actually had three consecutive monthly declines in retail sales as well in the fourth quarter last year. So from that perspective, then continuing unemployment insurance was essential, and the $600 stimulus checks helpful as well. And arguably, you know, the passing of that package was responsible for at least some of the equity market rally that we saw at the turn of the year. Now, last Friday, Biden published his fiscal plans. They will include a $1.9 trillion package addressing the pandemic response, relief to families, which will include a $1,400 stimulus check top up, relief to small businesses and communities. And the idea, I believe, is to get this through quickly. Further measures will follow in due course, though, perhaps in February. Now, listening to the incoming Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who, of course, most of us will remember as a previous Fed chair, she left us in very little doubt the other day that the administration plans to act big on fiscal policy and that there will be another spending stimulus due, perhaps coupled with some tax increases, but the emphasis very, very much on big stimulus. And, you know, as I mentioned, the numbers in the Senate and the House, where, of course, the legislation needs to pass, are very tight. So it's going to be difficult for Biden to do anything that's too, too radical. And some elements of his proposals may well not get through. But the big picture is fiscal policy is very supportive to the US economy and indeed the global economy and arguably also to global risk assets as well. As far as the US economy is concerned, to give you an idea of comparison, our benchmark is that we don't see the UK economy regaining its pre-pandemic size, i.e. Q4 2019 GDP levels, until mid-2022. In the US, by comparison, we see that being reached in the third quarter of this year. So that gives you an idea of relativities there. So overall, yeah, we see US fiscal policy playing a major part in the narrative for the world economy and markets this year.
Good day, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Kieran. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. If I remember, the last time we did one of these podcasts together, Spurs were going to win the league and Arsenal were going to get relegated. So not going to pick your thoughts on that, but I'm certainly the happier of the two of us.
Some things haven't changed, in my opinion.
We'll park the football chat to one side. And I just wanted to pick up on where things are, certainly from a trader's point of view. We've heard the update from Phil. There are a couple of things that stood out to me that I think we should touch on. And obviously, it would be good to also wrap up and get your views on some of the technicals as well. But first and foremost, Phil did mention the double dip recession potentially as something that certainly our economists don't feel will happen. I mean, UK GDP did fall 2.6% in November, but that was much less than earlier in 2020. Retail sales have certainly been better and propped up rather by online sales. So I just wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think, and are you hearing from the street that, they share the sentiment with Phil's team on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're looking at comments that the Bank of England have made this week, and the Governor Bailey was talking yesterday, I believe, talking about how the UK economy has adapted to these lockdowns a lot better. And so the effects that we've seen previously, where it hit the economy quite hard, have somewhat diminished. And you've also had Haldane talking about Q2 recovery, with the fact that you have the vaccine being rolled out. And with that, hopefully, lockdown will start to ease. And so he was very optimistic and very positive in terms of the market recovery. So it does seem that we will get this big boost as the vaccine rolls out and furlough ends. Hopefully, there won't be as many job losses as people would thought. And we might see a decent boost to the UK economy. One of the other things I've noticed, I read a Bloomberg article this week talking about the amount of savings the UK has managed to have over the last 12 months. And there's been a real big build out of amount of money on deposits. So it seems like there is cash to spend as and when lockdown ends. So we will see obviously a lot of people going out and spending, the social spending that we have, but also maybe some big ticket items that people have been putting off with the job security being uncertain. So as we lift and as we go ahead, it does seem like we'll get a decent boost to the economy as people start spending money again.
Well, let's certainly hope so. It's clearly been a traumatic time for many, and just going into a third lockdown in the middle of winter has been pretty depressing for so many people, especially with the weather just not being able to show us much sunshine at all. But one good bit of news is that we have begun to see a recovery in the pound. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you think this is to do with the vaccination rollout? Obviously, if you were to just purely look at the COVID death count and the fact that, yesterday was, 1,820 deaths, which was the record set. And the weekly average death count per capita last week, I believe, was the worst or the highest in the whole world. So the government has come in for a lot of stick on the COVID strategy till now. But one thing we can certainly say is that we are streets ahead of a large number of countries in the world on the vaccine rollout. And I think You know, is that the reason potentially for why we're seeing this rally in the pound?
Largely, yes. I mean, if you look at against the dollar, what you're seeing is one positive news on the vaccine front in two ways. One, the UK is doing quite well. Also, this movement out of the safe haven flow of the dollar. So we're seeing a shift out of the dollar into a lot of EM currencies as well. And we're seeing that also in the dollar index dropping back towards 90. I think at the start of the week, it was like around 91. So we're going back to that 90 level for the dollar index. So it is a general dollar weakness as that money shifts from the safe haven of the dollar. But when we look at euro sterling, we're seeing a double edge there, really. We're seeing the eurozone really lagging behind on the vaccine rollout. There are more lockdowns in Germany and looking at tight restrictions. And we're seeing this constantly play out over most of Europe. And their slow rollout of the vaccine really shows up against euro sterling. And we've seen that really with sterling euro breaking above 112.85 in recent days. I'm not sure if you remember, but this is quite a key level to be looking at where it's, I think it tried to trade up there around six times and failed. And this week we finally seen the breakthrough. And we're currently trading around 113. So it isn't flying through, but we're certainly seeing some disparity between the euro weakness and sterling strength at the moment.
Indeed. And I did see that hover around that 112.85 mark for quite a while. And in a similar light, you know, saw sterling dollar, hover in the high 136s. It took a little bit of taking to get through 137. Just to change the focus over to the dollar. And let's, you know, there's been obviously the biggest news of the week has been the fact that we now have, new leadership in Washington DC. Donald Trump has officially gone off to lower his golf handicap. So, just wanted to get your views certainly on the dollar and in particular the U.S. fiscal stimulus package of $1.9 trillion. And, of course, Janet Yellen, who is the new Treasury Secretary, in her recent speech, which really backed up this big spending plan, saying now's the time to spend and to help people in need. Is this good for the dollar? Are we going to see further weakness there? What are your thoughts on the changing of guard in America?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think everyone's a bit more comfortable with Biden in charge, in the fact that the rhetoric that comes out of the US is going to be a bit more tamed, as it were. And we won't be looking for Twitter for our headlines as much, which is nice for all of us. It's a bit tricky. I mean, they've still got to push this bill through. It isn't quite done yet. And, you know, it will spur growth. You know, it will be, good for the US economy, this money being pumped into the system in increasing sort of GDP and things like that. So it is quite interesting. And also the fact that Yellen, when she made her speech this week, she was still in favour of a strong dollar. There wasn't any comments of like, maybe wanting a slightly weaker dollar. I mean, it might be the case that they wouldn't mind a weaker dollar at the moment, but I don't see any big changes in terms of the overall strong dollar policy that the US has held for many years.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think, you know, it certainly will be, in terms of the spending plan and the fiscal stimulus package, very supportive for the US economy and probably the global economy at large and for risk appetite. So, you know, from my point of view, I think there is scope for further dollar weakness on that front. And if we were to kind of, you know, just caveat that by saying, you know, nothing ever moves up in a straight line, right? So for those who are dollar buyers and sellers against the pound, just be wary of technicals on the top side. I think also you've got to look at the fact that there's just so many unknowns with the virus, right? I mean, these new strains that are popping up everywhere now. There's a new strain found in Germany this week, you know, not to mention the South African one and so forth. So just how these strains basically develop and whether the vaccines at the moment, they seem fine, they're working okay. But if that were to be a shift there, and let's say the vaccines don't, you know, we could very much find ourselves back in a risk of position very easily. So keep a watchful eye, keep close to the desk. But from Chris and I think that's where we'll wrap this one up. Until next time, cheers, everyone.